And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Theater in Australia, based on that classic movie, Forbidden Planet, yes, the one that spawned Robbie the Robot, among other groovy stuff. I don't have a whole lot of information on Caltex Theater and stuff. This is one fantastic show using the actual effects from the classic science fiction movie of the 50s, yes, the original sound effects. Sit back, get your ray guns out, and enjoy Forbidden Planet. From the Caltex Theater in Australia, right next to our home. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Caltex Theater, a full hour of dramatic entertainment broadcast over a nationwide network of stations throughout Australia. The Caltex Theater is brought to you by Caltex Oil, marketers of over 1,000 outstanding petroleum products, in association with Caltex dealers and distributors everywhere. Tonight in the Caltex Theater, you will hear a special adaptation of the unusual Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer motion picture, Forbidden Planet, a fascinating science fiction story set in a world of tomorrow. Starring in Forbidden Planet, you will hear Lionel Stevens, your producer, Cressick Jenkinson. The Caltex Theater presents Forbidden Planet, Act One.
In the final decade of the 21st century, men and women in rocket ships landed on the moon. By 2200 AD, they had reached the other planets in our solar system. Almost at once, there followed discovery of hyperdrive, through which the speed of light was attained and later greatly surpassed. So at last, mankind began the conquest and colonization of deep space. United Planets cruiser C-57D was more than a year out from Earth base on a special mission to the planetary system of the great main sequence star, Altair.
When do we get a DC fix, Jerry?
30 seconds, Skipper. Ship on course, sir. We'll reach DC point at 1701. That's less than 3 minutes now.
Chief, we'll drop back below light speed in about 3 minutes. Got your breakable gear stored?
Aye, aye, sir.
DC set and punched on, Skipper.
All right, attention. Captain to crew. All hands squared away to decelerate. DC stations. Down to 0.3896 of light speed.
Skipper, there's Altair coming up on the screen, right on the nose.
Okay, Jerry, punch out an orbit on the fourth planet.
Aye, aye, Skipper. Ship in approach, Skipper. Helical vector orientated.
Attention, captain to crew, attention. Our destination, Altair 4, is now visible on the main viewplate. As you recollect from your briefing lectures, this is an Earth-type planet. 20 years ago, the spacecraft Bellerophon landed here with a prospecting party of scientists. Our mission is to search for survivors. That is all. Well, Doc, there it is.
The Lord certainly made some beautiful worlds.
Look at it, Cookie. What do you think about that, huh?
Not one of them new worlds. No beer, no women, no blue parlors, nothing. Nothing to do but throw rocks at tin cans. We gotta bring our own tin cans.
Attention, captain to crew. We are now entering the atmosphere of Altair 4. No survival suits will be required upon landing. Oxygen content 4.7 richer than Earth standard. Gravity only 0.897. Adjust your equipment accordingly, that's all.
All hands, check equipment.
Jerry, can you make out anything down there?
Well, maybe missing some individual structures, but as far as I can see, there are no cities, ports, roads, bridges, dams. There's just no sign of civilization at all.
Sir, we're being laid off.
What? Let me see that.
There it is in the electronic equipment.
There, can you zero on it?
No, sir, but it seems to emanate from an area about 20 miles square.
Bosun, pass the alert.
Aye, aye, sir. Combat stations, blast the men, activate your scopes.
Radio contact, sir. There's a voice here.
Human?
Yes, sir, sounds like it.
Boost it on the speaker.
Hey, ship, identify yourself. You are being tracked.
Cut me in, Quinn.
Yes, sir.
United Planets Cruiser C-57D, J.J. Adams commanding. Who are you?
Mobius, of the Bellerophon.
Who?
Edward Mobius.
Jerry?
Yep, here it is. His name's on the passenger list. Mobius E., Ph.D., Lit. D., Expedition Philologist.
What do you wish here, Cruiser?
We're your relief, sir. We're very glad to find you alive. Dr. Mobius, are you there?
Naturally, I appreciate your concern. But absolutely no assistance of any kind is required.
Well, the red carpet treatment, huh?
Dr. Mobius, my orders are to survey the situation on Altair 4.
Let me repeat. I'm in no sort of difficulty here. Your best procedure will be to turn back at once, without landing.
Sorry, sir, but those aren't my orders.
Commander, if you sat down on this planet, I warn you that I cannot be answerable for the safety of either your ship or your crew.
Dr. Mobius, I require landing coordinates. I'll be obliged if you'll supply me with them.
Very well. And I wash my hands of all responsibility. You have standard charts?
Yes, sir.
You may come in at 83, 17, 4 north, 148, 21 west.
Thank you. Got that, Jerry?
It's right back there in the desert.
Commander, I strongly urge you to reconsider.
Quinn, cut him off.
Please permit me to recommend that...
Yeah. There's something funny going on down there, Skipper.
Well, we'll soon know what it is. Okay, Jerry, I'll take her in. All clear, sir.
No sign of any living being.
Thank you, Bosun.
Look at the color of that sky.
That's fantastic greenish yellow.
Fantastic, Doc, but I'll still take blue.
Oh, I don't know. The sky, the desert,
the mountains. I think a man could get used to this and grow to love it.
You better check your command, Mike, Skipper.
Yeah, good idea. Chief.
Sir.
You're in command now, Quinn, back there in the ship. You keep right at those instruments while we look around.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hey, what's this dust coming?
Dust?
A column of dust sweeping toward us over the desert. It must be a vehicle of some sort.
It looks like we're being met.
Bosun, like your men.
Aye, aye, sir.
The speed he's traveling. That driver must be a madman.
What driver?
You're right. There's a mechanical creature in charge of it.
It's coming over to us. Take it steady now.
Welcome to Altair 4, gentlemen.
It talks.
I am to transport you to the residence. If you do not speak English, I am at your disposal with 187 other languages, along with their various dialects and sub-tongues.
No, colloquial English will be fine, thank you. This is no offense, but you are a robot, aren't you?
That is correct, sir. For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie.
Hmm. Well, it's a nice climate you have here, Robbie. High oxygen content.
I rarely use it myself, sir. With my metallic structure, it promotes rust.
Hey, Doc, is it a male or a female?
Cookie, I really couldn't say.
In my case, sir, the question is totally without meaning. Will you get in the vehicle, gentlemen?
Doc, Jerry, come along with me.
Right, right.
Quinn, trace this vehicle. If I blink red back to you,
I'll bring the tractor in a hurry, sir.
Right. Hey, Skipper. Just room for you.
Passengers will please fasten their seat belts.
Looks after us like a mother. Midst of a desert, if you like. Have you ever seen a more gracious and attractive home? Exotic flowers, shady trees, pools of clear water? And there in the doorway, if I'm not mistaken, our unwilling host.
I am Morbius.
I'm Commander Adams. This is Lieutenant Farman, my executive. Lieutenant Astro, our ship's doctor.
How ironic that a simple scholar with no ambition beyond a modest measure of seclusion should, out of a clear sky, find himself besieged by an army of fellow creatures. Or grimly determined to be of some service to him.
I'm sorry, sir, if we're not welcome, but we do have our orders.
Of course. And you must stay for lunch, gentlemen. Do forgive the ill manners of an old recluse, if you can. Well, gentlemen, won't you come in?
Well, whatever that lunch was, it was certainly delicious.
Simply some of Robbie's synthetics.
He's your cook, too, eh?
He even manufactures the raw material. Now come around here, Robbie. I'll show you how he works. Oh, one introduces a sample of human food through this aperture in the upper part of Robbie's body. Down here, there's a small built-in chemical laboratory where he analyzes it. Later, he can produce identical molecules in any shape or quantity.
Oh, a housewife's dream.
Plus absolute selfless obedience. But do not attribute feelings to him, gentlemen. Robbie is simply a tool. Tremendously strong, good. He could quite easily topple this whole house off its foundation.
In the wrong hands, mightn't such a tool become a deadly weapon?
No, Doctor, not even if I were the mad scientist of the thrillers. Because, you see, there happens to be a built-in safety factor. Commander, may I borrow that formidable-looking sidearm of yours? Thank you. Now, Robbie, point this thing at that fruit tree out there on the terrace. Fire! The tree has disintegrated entirely. You understand this mechanism you're in?
Yes, Morbius. A simple blaster.
All right. Now turn around here. Pointed at the commander.
What? Now, wait a minute.
Aim right between the eyes.
Fire!
You see, he's helpless. His whole electronic being is in a most distressing turmoil. He's locked in a sub-electronic dilemma between my direct orders and his basic inhibitions against harming rational beings. Order canceled. If I were to allow that distress to continue, he would blow every circuit in his body.
Dr. Morbius, how did you come by such a mechanism?
Oh, I didn't come by him, Doctor. I just tinkered him together during my first 2 months here.
What? You mean you made it?
A useful enough toy left on? But nowadays, I have no time for such things.
Dr. Morbius, you're a philologist, an expert in words and languages, their origins and meanings. Yet this robot of yours is beyond the combined resources of all Earth's physical science.
My dear Commander, I think you overestimate both Robbie and myself. Gentlemen, let me now show you another bit of parlor magic. If I wave my hand over this beamer...
Hey, we're trapped.
Steel shutters over all the doors and windows.
Now, forgive me, gentlemen, I did not mean to alarm you. I had Robbie install those steel shutters before I realized how altogether safe I am here. I just have to pass my hand over the beamer again, and they return to their original position.
Oh, that's better.
Well, gentlemen, this has been very pleasant. You've seen how very comfortable I am here. No hardships, no special difficulties, and no need at all for military assistance. I dare say you would become impatient to get back to base.
Yes, sir. The moment we've interviewed the other members of the Bellerophon party.
The others? But there are no others, Commander.
The what?
Before the first year was out, they'd all, every man and woman, succumbed to a... Well, a sort of planetary force here. Some dark, terrible, incomprehensible force. Only my wife and myself were immune.
And how do you account for your immunity, Dr. Morbius?
Well, my wife and I differed from the others in our special love of this new world, in our boundless longing to make a home here, far from the scurry and the strife of mankind. I remember how, when the boat was taken to return to Earth, she and I were utterly heartbroken.
Skipper, there's no record of any wife on the list of the Bellerophon passengers.
Lieutenant, look under biochemistry, Julia Marson. She and I were married with a skipper on the voyage out here.
I thought Robbie had made some very charming feminine touches. I take it Mrs. Morbius isn't at home today.
My dear wife died a few months after the others. And in her case, it was of natural causes.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Dr. Morbius, just what were the symptoms of all those other deaths? The unnatural ones, I mean.
The symptoms are very striking, Commander. One by one, in spite of every possible safeguard, my co-workers were torn literally limb from limb.
By what?
By some devilish thing that never once showed itself.
And the Bellerophon?
Vaporized, as the three remaining survivors tried to take her off.
And yet in all these 19 years, you personally have never again been bothered by this planetary force?
Only in nightmares of those times. Yet always in my mind, I seem to feel the creature is lurking somewhere close at hand. Sly and irresistible. Only waiting to be reinvoked. For murder.
Father?
Walter! Walter, I specifically asked you not to join us for lunch.
Oh, but Father, lunch is over. I'm sure you never said a word about not coming in for coffee. Well, did you or did you not?
A girl. A brother. Is she terrific?
Take it easy now, Farman.
Gentlemen, this is my daughter, Commander Adams, Dr. Ostrow.
How do you do?
Lieutenant Farman.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, I've always so terribly wanted to meet a young man and... And now, three of them at once.
That's very kind of you.
Oh, you're lovely, Doctor. Of course, the other two are unbelievable.
Well, that puts me in my place.
Could this one get you some coffee?
Oh, I'm quite able to get it.
Oh, of course you are, but come over here.
Well, Commander, if I can be of any help to you in your preparations for a homeward voyage.
Thank you, sir, but unfortunately, circumstances may keep us here for quite a while.
Oh, circumstances?
My orders don't quite seem to cover the Bellerophon fatalities. I'm forced now to contact base for new instructions.
But, Commander, suppose these new instructions require my return to Earth for questioning. 2 years or more away from my work here? No, I... Tell me, just what is involved in your making contact with Earth base?
Well, fundamentally, it's a question of crude power, how to short-circuit the continuum on a 5 or 6 parsec level. Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
No.
To build one, we'd have to make use of about 2/3 of the ship's electronic gear, then unship the main drive to juice it. Just to construct a bunker to house the core would take us about 10 days.
Disabled here for 10 days and 10 nights? Tell me, would 2-inch lead shielding do just as well?
Sure, it'd be fine. If we happen to be carrying about 100 square yards of the stuff.
I'll have Robbie run some up for you. We'll have it not later than noon tomorrow.
Oh, that's very obliging of you, sir.
Obliging? Look out there, Commander. The graves of the Bellerophon party. I dug those graves with my own hands. Believe me, I had no wish to repeat that experience.
You can put it over there by the core, thank you, Robbie.
Wait a minute. That's solid lead he's carrying.
Common lead would have crushed the vehicle, sir. This is my morning's run of isotope 217. The whole thing hardly comes to 10 tons. Pardon me, sir.
Oh, hello, Alter.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Does your father know you're out here?
He did tell me not to go near the ship, but this isn't very near, is it?
You'd be farther away still if we took a walk.
Well, Robbie might come back.
Oh, he's occupied over there. Cookie's following him around like a shadow. Now, come on, a walk's just what you need on a morning like this. Hey, Robbie.
Can I be of service, sir?
Now, never mind about the sir. Hey, come over here where the skipper can't see us. Look, I'm nothing by a cook, so you don't have to be that polite. But I'm a stranger on this so-called planet, and I was just wondering if, if you could tell me where I could get hold of some of the real stuff.
Real stuff?
Just for cooking purposes, you understand. I take a big pride in my duties.
Pardon me, sir. Stuff?
Oh, just about one jaw left in this bottle. Now, this is it. Genuine Asian rocket bourbon. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, I didn't say you could drink it. You low-living contraption. I ought to take a can opener to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing. Yes. Relatively simple alcoholic molecules with traces of fusel. Would 60 gallons be sufficient?
Gallons? Hey, Robbie, I've been from here to there in this galaxy, and I just want you to know, you're the most understanding soul I ever met up with.
Tomorrow night, sir, it will be ready. Now, if you will pardon me, Miss Alter will be waiting.
Nothing personal, Alter. Just a kiss.
Oh, but, Lieutenant, why should people want to kiss each other?
Oh, well, it's an old custom. All the really high civilizations go in for it.
Oh, but it's so silly.
Well, it's good for you, though. It stimulates the whole system. As a matter of fact, you can't be in tip-top health without it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'd only be too happy to show you.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Lieutenant.
Oh, it's no trouble at all.
Is that all there is to it, this kissing?
Well, you've sort of got to stick with it.
Oh. Well, could we try just once more? Do you mind?
Oh, not at all.
I don't know, Lieutenant. There must be something seriously the matter with me because, well, honestly, I haven't noticed the least bit of stimulation.
Honey, let's do this thing right. This time, let's really give it the works, huh? All right, honey, now just let yourself go and...
Lieutenant Bob!
Don't say another word, sir. I know there are a lot of pressing duties waiting for me back at the ship.
You're right, Lieutenant.
And rank does have its little privileges, doesn't it, sir?
You can depend on it, Lieutenant, that those privileges won't be stretched into taking your kind of advantages.
What I...
Dismissed!
Yes, sir.
Well, what's the matter? Why did you both act so funny?
Well, don't you understand, Al, that... No? Well, look at yourself. You can't run around like that in front of men. It's bad enough anyway, a girl like you, after a year in a spaceship. But when you're wearing nothing but that play suit, particularly in front of a space wolf like Farman, well, for Pete's sake, go home and put on something that's... Well, put on anything.
What's wrong with my clothes? I designed them myself. Oh, don't you like the way I look? Stop looking at me that way.
Elsa, get out of here before I have you run out of the area under guard. Then I'll have to put more guards on the guards. Now get out of here, Elsa.
Funny feeling, Joe. I stood guard over the spaceship before at night. There never were two moons in the sky.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah?
Do you hear something?
Like what?
Like a sort of big breathing.
No.
That's funny. I did.
No one around. You can see that. No sign of anyone or anything.
Funny. Like a sort of big breathing.
All right, both guards claim to have been at their posts on the way. Yet the ship was entered. The heavy-duty hatch was raised and the latch back. Equipment was sabotaged. All this without anybody seeing or hearing anything.
Same story from everyone, Skipper.
Quinn, I don't care how you do it, but this gear has got to be patched up. Otherwise, we'll never get the transmitter working to contact Earth base. And we'll never be able to take the ship home again when the time comes.
Yeah.
No one actually saw or hurt anyone last night. Strong says he...
Yeah, I know. He thinks he heard something like a big breathing.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of tonight's Caltech play, Forbidden Planet. In a moment, we commence Act Two. The Caltech Theater now presents Lionel Stevens in Forbidden Planet. Act Two.
Well, you like my new dress, Commander?
Well, I...
It's long, you see. Nothing shows through.
Elsa, I'm sorry about the way I spoke to you yesterday. I was, well, sort of bothered.
I had this dress made especially for you. Though I didn't really want to see you. You still look at me in that funny way. I suppose there's just something personally about me that you don't like.
Alta, you always look quite beautiful.
Well, then why don't you kiss me like everybody else does?
Everybody? Hasn't your father taught you anything at all?
Well, he says I'm terribly ignorant. But I've had poetry and mathematics and logic, physics and geology and
biology? Well, of course, that's mainly on the theoretical side.
Oh, well, so far. But what's wrong with theory?
This is what's wrong with it.
That wasn't at all as I felt after the lieutenant kissed me. I feel different altogether. Oh, a wonderful feeling.
Thanks. Go back to the house. I have to see. This is the situation, Dr. Morbius. Last night, the ship was entered and our Klystron monitor was sabotaged.
And you suspect me? Then the time has come for clarification. Sit down, gentlemen. In times long past, this planet was the home of a mighty and noble race of beings who called themselves the Krell. Ethically as well as technologically, they were a whole million years ahead of mankind. For in unlocking the mysteries of nature, they conquered even the Vesa cells. In the course of aeons, they abolished sickness, insanity, crime, and all injustice. But then, seemingly upon the threshold of some supreme accomplishment, which was to have crowned their entire history, this all but divine race perished in a single night.
Perished?
Yes, Doctor. In the 2,000 centuries since that unexplained catastrophe, even their cloud-piercing towers of brass and porcelain and adamantine steel have crumbled back into the soil of Altair IV, and nothing, absolutely nothing, remains above the ground. However, under the ground...
Under the ground, Dr. Morbius?
Behind this room there is a tunnel. Now come with me, and I will show you wonders of which the human mind could never conceive. Well, gentlemen, already you've seen a certain amount. You've seen krill metal, with molecules so densely interlocked that your blasters make no kind of impact on it. You've seen mile upon mile of self-servicing, self-renewing machinery, still functioning as perfectly as when it was constructed, more than 2,000 centuries ago.
Utterly incredible.
You've seen their laboratories.
What's this, Dr. Morbius?
On this screen may be projected a total scientific knowledge of the krill, from its primitive beginnings to the day of its annihilation. A sheer bulk, surpassing many million earthly libraries. I turn this knob, and as you see, the panel lights up. Hieroglyphics appear.
You're able to read this?
A little. It's my profession. I started on it some 20 years ago. Eventually, I was able to deduce most of their huge logical alphabet, so I began to learn. And the first practical result was that robot of mine, which you gentlemen appear to find so very remarkable. Child's play. Why, I come here every day now for 2 decades, painfully picking up a few of the least pivotal fragments of their knowledge.
A thing like this, it's too big to evaluate.
But Dr. Morbius, what's this device?
Oh, one could describe that as a brain booster. And as a headset, electrodes at each end. You can see it was designed for something far bulkier than my human cranium.
And its function?
I will activate it. Now, watch closely.
A figure's appearing. It's Alter.
Just a three-dimensional image, Commander.
But it's alive.
Because my daughter is alive in my brain from microsecond to microsecond whilst I manipulate. There. I remove the electrodes from my temples, and the image vanishes. It's something of a strain.
Let me try. I put the headset on, I pull the switch. Now, is that right?
Stop.
But I want to...
Commander, you would never survive. Our Bellerophon skipper tried it. It was instantly fatal to him.
Oh, so you're immune to this too, Dr. Morbius.
In my first attempt at creating a brain image here, the shock rendered me unconscious for a whole day and a whole night.
Yet you came back for a second go at it?
It was a matter of science, Doctor. You can imagine my joy when I discovered that the shock had permanently doubled my intellectual capacity. Otherwise, my researches would have come to nothing, poor as they may have been.
So that's how it happened.
And I have a great deal more to show you, gentlemen. Can you spare further time away from your ship?
Yes, I believe so. I've left Lieutenant Farnham in charge. I've ordered him to set up a standard perimeter with a full here on
the... All right. All hands stand clear of the magnetic fence area.
Yeah. Have you tested it yet, Bosun?
Just about to do so, sir.
Mm-hmm. Toss the branch at it.
There you go, the spark, sir.
Fine. That'll keep any unwanted visitor from entering the camp. See the full-scale alerts maintained, Bosun.
Aye, aye, sir.
A lieutenant.
Huh? Oh, what's your trouble, Cookie?
Well, I haven't completed my washing up duties after chow. I request the lieutenant's permission to take a little walk outside the perimeter, sir.
But there's nothing out there.
Oh, sir, I thought it might brighten up the boys' mess a little bit if I could, find a few wild radishes or something.
Look, Cookie, I don't know what you're lying about, but, you better get back here before the skipper checks in, or we'll both get skinned.
Yes, sir.
Quinn, this is Farman. Kill the power on the fence. All right, Cookie, off you go.
Yes, sir. I thank you, sir.
All right, Quinn. Put it back on.
Robbie, I ain't never gonna forget this.
metal, stacks of them.
480 pints, sir, as you requested. Total 60 gallons.
Oh, I gotta try it. Wait a minute, Bobby. Genuine Kansas City bourbon. Smooth, too. Like I said, Robbie, anything I can do. Anytime you're hard up for a couple of gallons of lube oil, you just let me know, huh? Hey, what's up? You see something? Somebody coming this way?
No, sir. Nothing coming this way.
Hey, Lieutenant! Lieutenant! There's the storehand! Lieutenant!
Sure. But there's no one coming through.
Shall I have the current shut down, sir?
No. No, it's stopped now. Strange, that. Just shorting out.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, check over the whole system first thing in the morning, boss.
Aye, sir.
Hey, boss. That fence, the way it was shorting.
Yes, sir.
Commander, you're too arbitrary. Perhaps I do not choose to be dictated to in my own world.
But Dr. Morbius, a scientific find of this magnitude has got to be taken under United Planets supervision. No one man can be allowed to monopolize it.
For the past 2 hours, I've been expecting you to make exactly such an asinine statement.
Asinine?
Just one moment, Commander. For close on 20 years now, I've been constantly, and I hope dispassionately, considering this very problem. Now I've come to the unalterable conclusion that man is unfit as yet to receive such knowledge, such almost limitless power.
Whereas Morbius, with his artificially expanded intellect, is now ideally suited to administer this power for the whole human race.
Precisely, Doctor. Such portions of the Krell science as I may from time to time deem suitable and safe, I shall dispense to Earth. Other portions I shall withhold. In this, I shall be answerable exclusively to my own conscience and judgment.
Dr. Morbius, in the absence of special instructions, you leave me in a very awkward position. I'm wanting to contact you from the ship. Adam speaking.
Commander, this is Farman.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Skipper, the chief's been murdered.
Quinn murdered? What?
He was alone on the ship working on the monitor. The rest of us were all outside on guard duty.
But how was it done?
Done? Skipper, his body's plastered and all over the communications room.
Right. Leave everything as it is. We're on our way. Come on, Doc.
It started again.
Doc, that's the foot of whatever it was that killed Quinn last night.
I made this plaster model from the footprints we found. 37 inches by 19. And the terrifying thing, Skipper, this thing runs counter to every known law of evolution. It just doesn't fit into normal nature. Anywhere in this galaxy, it's a nightmare.
Commander, are you ready to hold discipline on the cook?
Yes, what's happening?
Come on, Cookie.
Yes, sir.
I'm obliged to remind you, sir, that I gave him permission to go out last night.
Did you give him permission to get falling down drunk, Lieutenant?
Drunk, sir? Me, sir? Well, anyway, why did that robot argue me into drinking all that whiskey in the first place?
You were with the robot last night?
Oh, yes, sir. Him and me, we kind of got to toasting each other's good health. Just for your cordial interplanetary relations, you understand?
And that went on all the time, even while the chief was being killed?
Well, certainly, sir. But you don't think I could have got that stiff in 5 minutes?
All right, dismissed.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, come on, Cookie.
Well, Doc, it just about washes the robot up as a suspect.
And what does that leave us with?
Maybe it leaves us with the same one we've always had.
Morbius.
But we were with him.
Maybe you and I ought to drop over to the Krell laboratory and get our brains boosted. Then maybe we could understand.
Sir?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Dr. Morbius is here.
Oh. Well, ask Dr. Morbius to come in.
Yes, sir.
Skipper, what do you suppose he's...
Oh, good day, Dr. Morbius.
Well, Commander, I dare say neither of us really slept last night.
That's a pretty close guess.
I warned you while your ship was still in space. I bade you not to land on the planet. Believe me, Commander, that's only a foretaste. The Bellerophon pattern is being woven all over again.
What?
Remain here, and the next attack upon your party will be more general and more deadly.
Dr. Morbius, how do you know that?
No? Well, I seem to visualize it. If you wish, call it a premonition. That is all I have to say, Commander.
Well, Skipper, what do you make of that?
I'd say it sounded like an ultimatum. We'll be ready. Tonight we'll be prepared for an attack. The bosun, I want a clear field of fire in all directions.
You've got it, sir.
Fine. Lieutenant.
Sir.
You got your trouble squad in hand?
Yes, sir, they're in hand. But they're a little trigger happy. They're sort of edgy to see whatever's out there tonight.
Jerry, look, this might be a big deal coming up.
Could be the biggest, Skip.
Well, I want you to know that I'm sorry if I kind of leaned on you. You've got to understand that.
Stop knocking yourself out, Skip. She picked the right man.
What? Oh.
Skipper, radar just picked up something.
Where away?
At the head of the gully, heading this way.
Automatic control. Batteries. Fire. Hold fire.
Dead on target, Skipper, but it's still coming.
I'll stop it. Get back, Lieutenant. Batteries, fire. Batteries, cease fire.
Skipper, it's still coming.
Well, whatever it was, our main battery finally stopped it.
You believe that, Skipper?
No, it just went away for some reason. It'll be back. Dark, an invisible being that can't be disintegrated by atomic fission.
No, Skipper, that's a scientific impossibility.
Hypnotic illusions don't tear people apart, and that's what this thing did to our men tonight. Doc, you saw it shape yourself standing right there in those neutron beams.
It must have been made of solid nuclear material, renewing its molecular structure from one microsecond to the next.
Bosun, I want the tractor.
Ready, sir.
So now we just pick up the girl and her father, whether they like it or not, do we?
Section 86A, evacuate all civilians from disaster area.
Yeah? You left out two very important words. Where feasible. Now, if you're a member of the Bellerophon expedition, their ship was vaporized trying to lift off.
Which makes it a gilt-edged priority that one of us gets into that Krell lab and takes that brain boost. Well, I don't know of any other way we can hope to combat this thing.
You remember what happened when the Bellerophon's commander took that brain boost?
Yes, I remember that, too. Doc, in case we make it into the lab, I'll take first go at the booster. You hear me, Doc?
I hear you, Skip.
Bosun?
Aye, sir.
Leaving you in command while we visit Dr. Morbius. Get the ship operational. Do your best to wait it out for me and the doctor, but the second that fence starts to short again, you lift off.
Right, Skipper.
Let's go, Doc.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you. So glad. I've had the most awful dream that you...
I'm all right, Alter.
Why are you here? Tell me what's happened.
We were attacked. Three men died, including Jerry Farman.
Oh, darling.
That's why I came here. Before anything else happens, I have to see to your safety.
How were you attacked? By what?
I don't know. It's nothing human, just some kind of big outline on the disintegrator beams. Alter, you can't explain it.
No.
Anyway, we fought it, and we lost, and I believe it'll come back.
Well, then you must leave now.
Darling, I'm not going without you.
I can't possibly leave Father alone. I just can't.
Then we'll take him with us.
By force? I can't agree to that either.
Also, you don't realize what's loose on this planet.
But I'm immune, like both my parents.
That's what your father says, but I don't believe it. Nothing could be immune to that thing up there.
Oh, darling, please go. Please, if you love me,
but
go.
Don't listen to me.
Oh, go, darling.
Doc, can you talk some sense into this? Hey, Doc. Oh, where is he? The doc was right here.
Here is the doctor, sir.
Doc?
Lay him on the sofa, Robbie.
Door's open into the tunnel.
That's where Robbie brought him from.
Doc, you took the brain boost? You ought to see my new mind. Up there in lights, on the indicator. Bigger than Morbius. Now, easy, Doc, easy. Easy. Listen, Morbius was too close to the problem. The Krill... The Krill had completed their final project. True creation, creation of life. Well, come on, Doc, let's have it. But the Krill forgot one thing.
Yes, what?
Monsters. Monsters from the Id.
The Id? What's that? Well, talk, Doc. Doc.
Oh, darling.
How romantic.
Father.
A fool and middling idiot. As though his ape's brain could contain the secrets of the Krell.
Father. He's dead.
He was warned, and now he's paid. Let him be bedded along with the other victims of greed and folly.
Morbius, you've chosen for me. John, I'm ready to go with you.
Hold her. No. Commander, she mustn't do this. She must be prevented.
Morbius, what is the Id?
Young man, my daughter is planning a very foolish action. She will be terribly punished.
What is the Id?
Id. It's an obsolete term once used to describe the elementary basis of the subconscious mind.
Monsters from the Id, the subconscious mind.
What?
Monsters from the subconscious. That's what the doc meant. Morbius, those machines in there, 8,000 cubic miles of Klystron relays, enough power for a whole population of creative geniuses, operated by remote control, operated by the electromagnetic impulses of individual Krell brains.
And for what purpose?
In return, that machine would instantaneously project solid matter to any point on the planet, in any shape or color they might imagine. For any purpose, Morbius, creation by mere thought.
Why haven't I seen this all along?
But like you, the Krell forgot one deadly danger. Their own subconscious hate and lust for destruction.
The beast. The mindless primitive. Even the Krell must have evolved from that beginning.
So those mindless beasts of the subconscious had access to a machine that could never be shut down. The secret devil of every soul on the planet, all set free at once to loot and maim and take revenge, Morbius, and kill.
My poor Krell. After a million years of shining sanity, they could hardly have understood what power was destroying them. But there's one obvious fallacy. The last Krell died some 2,000 centuries ago. But today, as we all know, there's still at large upon this planet a living monster. A monster created by the subconscious mind of someone.
Your mind refuses to face the conclusion.
Morbius.
What?
Something approaching from the southwest, breaking down trees in its path. Quite close.
Father!
The monster. That thing out there, well, it's you. It was your subconscious that created it.
You're insane! You must be! How else would you have led it here, where Alta must see her torn to pieces?
You still think she's immune? She's joined herself to me, body and soul.
Yes, yeah. And whatever comes, forever!
Say it's a lie! Shout! Let it hear you out there! Say you don't love this man.
Not even if I could.
Stop it, Robbie. Don't let it in. Kill it, Robbie.
He can do nothing, Morbius. He knows it's your other self.
Adams, I'm not a monster.
We're all part monsters in our subconscious. That's why we have laws and religion.
Into the tunnel, quickly.
Morbius, you listen to me. We don't have much time. Your mind was artificially enlarged. Consciously, it still lacked the power to operate the great machines. But your subconscious had been made strong enough.
I won't hear you.
20 years ago, when your comrades voted to return to Earth, you sent your secret Id out to murder them.
Not quite real, Isaac, of course, except maybe in your dreams.
What man can remember his own dreams?
Well, at least when our ship was approaching from space, you remembered enough to warn us off. But then, when you thought you were threatening your little egomaniac empire, your subconscious sent its id monster out again. More deaths, Morbius. More murder. Even in you, the loving father, there still exists this mindless primitive. More enraged and more inflamed with each new frustration. So now you're whistling up your monster again to punish her for disloyalty and disobedience. And if you don't do something about it soon, Morbius, it's going to be coming right through that door.
Shut in, Bill Nipple. Impossible.
The machines are going to supply your monster with whatever amount of power requires to reach us.
I'll just say you don't believe this of me. Tell me you don't. And it must be true. I must be guilty. My evil self is at that door. And I have no power to stop it.
Father, you can help us. I've known you. Great and noble like the Krell?
Yes. Yes, I can help you. I can.
You! Up there! No further! I deny you! I give you up! I deny you!
It's finished. All finished.
Father.
Strain, it's been too much. Commander, throw that switch.
This?
Yes, throw it. In 24 hours, you and Alter must be 100 million miles away out in space. The Krell furnaces. A chain reaction has begun. Can't be reversed. Go! Go! Quickly!
.6 miles. We're clear now, Alta.
That's Altair 4 on the viewplate.
Yes, the bright speck below the star. In 15 seconds, it'll all be over. Altair 4 would be destroyed. Your father, my shipmates, all the stored knowledge of the Krell. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. There. The explosion.
Oh, Father.
Altair. About 1 million years from now, the human race will have crawled up to where the Krell stood in their great moment of triumph and tragedy. Your father's name will shine again like a beacon in the galaxy. It'll remind us that we are, after all, not God.
So ends our Caltech's play, Forbidden Planet. Ladies and gentlemen, the producer of tonight's Caltech's play, Cressick Jenkinson. Thank you. Forbidden Planet was presented tonight by courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Proprietary Limited. The script was adapted for radio by Richard Lane, and the special sound effects were devised and recorded for this production by Graham Moncrief. In the starring role, you heard...
I played Dr. Morbius.
This was Lionel Stevens. Robbie the Robot, Edward Heppel. Dr. Ostro, Leonard Teal. Lieutenant Farman, Richard Meikle. Quinn, Stuart Finch. The Cook, John Llewellyn. The Bosun, Al Garcia. And as Alta and Commander Adams, you heard Joan Lander and Hart McGuire. Now this is your compere, Rick Hutton, bidding you good night.
And now,
for a new Avengers serial from Venus with Love. Enjoy.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Inside his vault, where Lord Mansford had been spending an hour looking at his art treasures, the space sounds began. The roar increased. Lord Mansford clapped his hands over his ears. The whole house seemed filled with the screaming sound. Then everything happened at once. There was a blinding flash. The vault clock rang and the door slid open. Jenkins and Mrs. Peel rushed into the vault.
This way, Mrs. Peel. There. He must be...
There he is. In the corner.
That can't be Lord Mansford. He's changed.
But it was Lord Mansford. His face was rigid, lifeless. His hair and mutton-chop moustache vividly white.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 4 of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel become aware that the British Venusian Society is in need of money, and that all contributions are gratefully received from Venus with Love. Emma Peel was completely confused by the activities of the British Venusian Society. Acting upon instructions from John Steed, she'd been trying to get in touch with outside members of the society. They were usually rich, influential members. And by the time Mrs. Peel got to them, they were usually dead. John Steed, on the other hand, was having a far less strenuous time and should have known exactly what was going on. He didn't. Although he'd so far passed all the membership tests and met a few of the members, including the eccentric Dr. Primble. But the two heads of the organization still seemed to be Crawford, a radio astronomer who made it clear that he didn't like Steed, and Venus Brown, the society's secretary, who made it clear that she did. At least Steed thought that was the impression he was getting. One thing was sure, Venus was living up to her name.
Is that drink to your taste, Mr. Steed?
Delectable.
A little more ice? Oh, it's so hot today. I mix the drink myself, though only I know the ingredients. What do you think is in it?
It couldn't be a love potion.
Well, there is passion fruit in it.
Oh, splendid.
Well, let's get down to things.
Already? Before it's had a chance to work?
Down to business. Dr. Primble says you've passed all the tests.
That's right. All reactions normal and ready to go.
He also says that you have special shots of films taken with an astro camera, which will be of interest to our society.
Huh? Oh, I don't know, just amateur fumbling at the moment.
You're not good at it.
Amateur fumbling? Well, I suppose I am amateur, you know.
British Venusian Society, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Is it possible to speak to Mr. John Steed, please?
Very well. Hold on. For you, Mr. Steed. A woman.
Ah, well, they dog my footsteps, you know. It's a passion fruit.
Mm.
Hello?
Steed?
Ah, Aphrodite. When did you get back?
Steed, what are you talking about? Can you meet me straight away?
Charmed.
Lord Mansford's house. It's happened again, Steed.
Again?
Yes. No time for more. Hurry up. Goodbye.
Bye. A Greek girl, I know, just popped out of the sea. Insists that we meet. Oh, excuse me, won't you? Bye, Miss Brown, or may I call you Venus? Bye for now.
In Lord Mansford's home, Mrs. Peel stood with Jenkins the butler in front of the open vault. They were looking at some photographic prints when Steed joined them.
Tragedy, a dreadful tragedy. How could it have happened?
Photos of the scene of the crime?
Strangely enough, yes. Lord Mansford kept all his art treasures in there. There was this door which sealed the place off.
When the young lady arrived, Lord Mansford was having a quiet hour with his collection. The timing device on the door was set to let him out at exactly 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock came, and zoom, the usual story. We got in to find him dead.
These prints... taken by an automatic security camera set inside the vault door.
Mm-hmm. Looks familiar.
Like a fireball against a dark background.
Like the shots from Sir Frederick Hadley's camera and the cover of Venus Brown's book. Let's have a closer look.
Steed walked into the vault and examined the gaping hole in the vault wall.
6 inches of solid steel. Now, what the devil could have cut through that?
Something did. Something more powerful than we can guess.
The New Zealands?
I've seen so many strange sights like this in the last few days. Who knows? After all, we've got to the moon. Something's bound to arrive here one day. Has anything leaked out?
Not a word. Complete security block.
And that duty rotor? There's still one man left alive. Brigadier Whitehead.
Whitehead? You're asking for trouble with a name like that.
Did you get in touch with him?
Tried. His phone must be permanently off the hook.
Brigadier Whitehead's phone was off the hook. The Brigadier was working. That meant he was living in the past, or rather, reliving past glories. Working on his memoirs, not writing a book, compiling a soundtrack.
Yes, that's about the volume I want. Now, where was I? Yes, microphone on. That's it. As you can hear, gentlemen, 0 hour is fast approaching. Invasion is imminent. We must counterattack without delay. You had your operational orders. You, Major Collins, will lead the 1st Battalion. You, Captain Smith, will follow through with the 2nd. And you, Lieutenant, will command the support company.
Brigadier Whitehead drew himself up to his full height and clicked his heels into the nearest microphone.
That's all, gentlemen, and good luck.
The Brigadier whipped smartly over to a bank of turntables, selected one, and started it under his next speech.
As my officers departed, I drove up to the front. Shells were exploding all round. Now, let me see. Where did I put that damn record of the shells? Ah, yes, here we are. The inferno broke out. And suddenly, all the guns were silent. There was just the grey sky and the mud. Not a sound.
Brigadier! Brigadier Whitehead!
Blast! Come in!
I'm so sorry to disturb you, Brigadier. I did ring the doorbell. There seems to be quite a bit of noise going on.
Yes, quite.
Oh, by the looks of the place, I'm intruding. But your phone is off the hook.
I know. It was taken off the hook.
Oh, I see. You're, still on your memoirs. How's it coming on?
Oh, very well, very well. I've new equipment. Hope to cut a long player on the invasion of Italy. Now, I got to the point where we just landed at Catania. Yes, it was at this point that a messenger drove up. Let me show you. Now, just hold this pickup and put it on when I tell you. Now. I tore open the dispatch. News, bad. I'd lost my battalion commander. I had to reach Ogle. I grabbed the messenger's bike and raced towards headquarters. Suddenly, under the wheels, a grenade exploded.
Drop the pickup. Now.
Oh, no.
I jumped for cover.
This?
No, 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 no. Wrong effect. Cut. Oh, better take a break. Care for a drink, Venus?
I'd rather have a generous contribution to the Society's funds.
Another contribution?
Well, if we're to launch our satellite...
You've already had 20,000.
That wouldn't even pay the fuel bill.
It would pay a few of mine.
Listen, Brigadier, I'm only a woman.
No, none of that. Before I dig any deeper, I'd like a peep at the accounts.
Accounts?
Treasurer's report. Hadley and Mansford are of the same mind. We'd like to see where the money is going.
Where do you think it's going?
Oh, You are touchy.
Well, if that's the way you're thinking, I'd better leave.
No. No need to be like that. Look, I can't make watch duty tonight. I'm working on the Battle of Palermo. You know, I almost bought it there. Had the luck of the devil.
Well, I hope it stays with you. Second time round. Goodbye.
Steed decided to call on Brigadier Whitehead himself. About time he did a bit of outside work, Steed. He drove up to the house and parked his car conveniently near the trees. As he moved towards the house, he noticed Venus Brown disappearing along the wooded drive, her long legs briskly carrying her shapely figure out of view round the bend. There was a burst of machine gun fire. Steve dropped into the nearest bushes.
I pulled out the pin of the grenade and hurled it into the dugout.
Steve picked himself out of the bushes.
The enemy was still advancing, and then...
Then, suddenly, a reverberating sound was heard. Had Mrs. Peel been there, she would surely have recognized it. Light dazzled Steed's eyes. Steed instinctively placed an arm over his eyes. There was a muffled roar. And a scream from the Brigadier.
Ah!
Sounds as though his luck didn't last a second time round after all.
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omen.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight's story, A Pail of Air, by Fritz Leiber.
It was pretty quiet in the nest. Pa was just sitting by the fire, staring into it like he does these days. And Ma was asleep. That's why it was so quiet. Ma has some pretty bad times when she just screams and screams and huddles back against the blankets that line the nest. Sis was looking at herself in the mirror that hangs next to the bookshelf. I don't know what she finds to look at so long, but then she's a girl. She just looks at herself. Saturdays, when Pa puts a couple of extra lumps of coal on the fire and we take a bath, she looks at herself in the mirror and sometimes she cries. I dropped the book I was reading, and I guess that woke Ma.
Huh?
What, Pa?
Pick up the book, Bud.
I'm sorry, Pa.
It's come back. Hasn't it, Alfred? It's come back.
It was just Bud. He dropped his book.
Oh, but it's come back. Well, it's out there now, isn't it? I feel a lot warmer.
No, Ethel.
It's up there in the sky. Just the way it always was. I know. I had a dream, Alfred.
I know, dear. Sis, melt your mother a cup of water.
I'm combing my hair.
Sis.
Oh, all right.
I've got to get up. I know it's there. There'll be crocuses. And the spring bulbs. And daffodils.
What are daffodils, Ma?
Well, Buddy, they're a flower. And they're very pretty. Yellow. On a tall green stalk. Oh, I want to go out. I want to take the children out.
All right now, Ethel. Here's some water.
Come on, children. We'll all go out and you can play in the sun.
Sure, Ma.
Here, drink the water, Ma.
It's cold, Alfred. You wrap on the pipes and make that super send up some more heat.
What's a super, Pa?
It doesn't matter, Bud. There aren't any anymore.
Oh.
Pa, the pail's running low.
Bud, you better get into your things and go out and get an extra pail of air.
There are a couple of pails behind the first blankets.
Go on, get into your things.
It isn't back, is it?
No, it isn't.
There's no sun in the sky. No sun, is there?
No, Ma. What was it like?
The sun.
Sis, don't get your Ma upset.
The sun was yellow. And so bright you couldn't look at it. Burning hot. So hot. But when you stretched out in it, made you feel warm all over. Tingly warm. Been so long since I've been that warm.
I was warm last year on my birthday when Pa put all that extra coal on.
And then every morning it would come out of the east, make the clouds all pink and yellow. And the mist would rise in the ground, and then slowly everything would glow warmer, warmer. And then it would be up there in the sky, shining, warm.
Hurry up, Bud.
I'm almost ready, Pa.
I want the sun. I want the sun back. Alfred, get me the sun.
It's gone, Ethel. There's nothing I can do.
For Christmas? On my birthday?
Go ahead, Bud. Take the big pail and get it full this time. There's no sense in taking the trip for only half a bucket of air.
I spilled it the last time.
It's dark, Alfred, it's dark!
Go ahead, Bud.
Strap down the helmet, will you, sis?
For goodness sake, stand up straight.
Okay. All right, I'll be right back.
Don't hold the blankets open too long. All right, Ethel. We're all safe. Bud will be right back with another pail of air. It's all right.
I went through the 30 or so blankets that Pa hung up to slow down the air escaping from the nest. Of course, I knew the way. I've been going out for air since I was a kid. Still, I get a funny, crawly feeling every time I go out of the nest. You gotta go up to the fifth floor, which is just above the blanket of frozen air. You see, when the earth got cold, all the water in the air froze first and made a blanket about 10 feet thick or so. And then down on top of that dropped all the crystals of frozen air, making another blanket 60 or 70 feet thick. I came out of the window we use on the fifth floor and started to scoop up the air into my pail. I had it about full. Boy, my fingers are getting pretty cold. When I saw something. Hey! That's a light! Oh, darn it, I kicked over the bucket. Oh, there can't be a light. I'm not moving around in a window like that. There can't be. Ma and Pa and Sis are back in the nest. I'm up here, and there can't be anyone else. Everybody on Earth is dead except us. I had an idea how Ma must feel sometimes, the way she sees things. But there it was, moving around in the building across the way. I stood there shaking and I almost froze my feet. I did frost my helmet so solid on the inside I couldn't see anything. So I hurried up and scooped up another bucket of air and headed back for the nest as fast as I could. Pa! Pa, I saw something!
Go on, hang those outside clothes up by the fire.
Phew! Pa, I saw something, I did!
Shh! Your mother's quiet now. Don't upset her.
Pa, it was a light.
Wait till I get this air next to the fire. Give me the cloth, sis.
Shall I put another lump of coal on, Pa?
No. The oxygen from this bucket will get the fire up when it begins to melt. There.
Pa, I'm trying to tell you, I saw something up there. Light.
There's lots of light. Stars.
I know what stars look like, Dopey. They're big, steady white lights in the sky. This was down here in a building.
What is it? Alfred, what is it?
Nothing, Ethel. Now, what is this spot?
Well, first I thought it was a lady, a young lady. I mean it. Like in one of those old magazines. I thought I saw it in a window. But then all I saw was a light.
You watched it for some time, son?
Long enough for it to pass five windows and go to the next floor.
And it didn't look like stray electricity?
No, Pa, I know what that looks like.
Or a star refracted through an icicle? Sometimes if you catch it at the right angle, it...
Pa, honest, I never saw anything like it before.
Huh. All right. I'll go out with you and you show me.
No, Alfred. You can't go and leave us alone, not both of you.
It's all right. We'll be right back.
Here's your helmet, Pa.
There's something out there. I've always known there was something out there waiting to get it.
Hand me my glove.
Something that's part of the cold, hates all warmth, wants to destroy the nest. Been watching us all this time. Now it's coming after us, and it'll get you. And then it'll come for me. Oh, don't go. Alfred, please don't go.
Everything will be all right. Now, sis.
Yes, Pa?
You come watch the fire. Keep an eye on that air, too. If it gets too low or doesn't seem to be boiling fast enough, get another bucket behind the blanket.
Alfred, don't go.
I'll take care of it, Pa. Could there really be anybody out there?
I don't see how. We heard the last radio voices a year before Bud was born. There hasn't been anything since then.
Then what could it be?
I don't know. Probably just a reflection. An ice crystal cracking. Come on, Bud. Get your helmet on.
It's funny. When I go out alone, I'm not scared or anything. But when I go out with Pa, I always hang on to his belt like I used to when I was a little kid. Habit, I guess. It's the same no matter what trip we take. On the fifth floor, we stopped to rest just before we went out. We were in the room with the frozen people. The lady sitting looking at the door. The man holding his hands over that funny metal thing Pa calls a radiator. It was like a fire, I guess, but I don't see any place for the cold. We put our helmets together so we could talk.
Catch your breath, son.
Pa, would it be possible... I mean, for any of the frozen people to come to life? Like the ones down in the basement around the furnace when we go for water?
No, they're dead. They were caught too quickly when it happened.
Oh, Pa, how do we know we're the only ones?
We don't, but... Well, there's a feeling you get. Because it's always night. There used to be some of that feeling every night in the old days. But the sun chased it away every morning. You wouldn't know about that. You weren't born when the dark star pulled us away from the sun. You wouldn't know unless you'd seen the sun.
I've seen the sun. It's that big star at the end of the Big Dipper. I've seen it.
It isn't the same. Come on. We're wasting time.
I don't know what the city looked like in the old days, but now it's beautiful. The starlight lets you see it pretty well. We're up on a hill, and the plain slopes down away from us. Some taller buildings push up out of the feathery plain, topped by rounded caps of air crystals. Some of them are on a slant because a lot of the buildings are badly twisted by the quakes and everything when a dark star pulled the earth away from the sun. That's why Pa can't seal up the nest airtight. The building's twisted too bad. Besides, we have to keep the chimney open. We touched our helmets together so we could talk.
Is that where you saw it, son?
It isn't there anymore.
Uh-huh.
But it feels different. I mean, as if there's something out here, waiting.
Bud, if you see something like that again, don't tell the others.
Huh? Why not?
Well, your ma's sort of nervous these days, and we owe her all the feeling of safety we can give her. Once it was when your sister was born, I was ready to give up and die, but your mother kept me trying. Another time, she kept the fire going a whole week all by herself when I was sick.
She couldn't do that now. Not the way she is.
But you know that game we sometimes play, tossing a ball around? Well, courage is like a ball. A person can hold it only so long, and then he's got to toss it to someone else. When it's tossed your way, you've got to catch it and hold it tight. And hope there'll be someone else to toss it to when you get tired of being brave.
Yeah, I guess so.
Come on. We'll fill up the pails and get back.
But what about whatever it is out here?
We'll just have to wait and see. Come on. Before the helmets frost over.
It's pretty hard to hide your feelings in the nest. I mean, there's just room for the four of us. The blanket overhead just touches when Pa stands up straight. The floor is all covered with thick woolly rugs. Pa says it's inside a much bigger room, but I've never seen the real walls or ceiling. Well, anyway, Pa laughed and kidded about what I'd seen. He said I had an imagination, but we could tell he took it serious. It was Sunday morning by the clocks that Pa kept all wound up on the shelf. So it was time for the story. We all sat around in a circle the way we always do. Except I noticed that Pa casually took a hammer from the shelf and put it beside him. I always liked the story. Of course, Sis and I know it by heart from now. I mean, every Sunday since we were kids. But every once in a while, Pa surprises us by telling it a little different. Or throwing in some extras. It starts out with a song. Ma used to sing it, but she forgets the words sometimes. And now Pa sings it mostly.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, thy purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
Of course, the words don't mean anything. I mean, the skies are spacious enough, but there aren't any waves of grain, and the plain is all covered with a blanket of frozen air. But it's part of the story ceremony, and Pa likes it. He says it reminds him of the old days. After the song, Pa starts the story.
In the days of my youth, the sun hung above, golden and warm, and the earth was fruitful and multiplied, and the fields were green, and the day was glorious, and the wind blew across the hilltops, and the air was free and good to breathe.
That's the part of the story I like best, about how it was with the sun nice and warm. It's hard to believe all those people living without having to worry about cold and air. They were waking up sweating and screaming because you dreamed the fire went out. It's impossible to believe, but Pa was a good storyteller, and he made it seem real.
And then the dark star came rushing out of space. In the beginning, they tried to keep the news from the people, but when the floods and the earthquake started, the truth came out. At first, they thought the dark star would hit the sun. And then they were afraid it would strike the earth itself. But it didn't. It only came close.
Pa tells it like the sun and the dark star fought for the earth like two dogs over a bone. I know what he means, because I've seen a picture of a dog in a magazine. And then the Dark Star won and carried us off. But the sun kept the moon. There were earthquakes and floods. Pa says that mountains fell and oceans slopped over. Oceans, that's a lot of melted water lying around loose. It's hard to imagine. Pa says it was so. Then came the open question time in the story. Sis asked a question about what girls wore for clothes. And I asked Pa how people acted in those days when the earth was twisted and jerked almost apart.
Well, Bud, I was too busy to notice much. A friend of mine, Dr. Weisbrot, and Kelly, the geophysicist, and Walters, the astronomer, we knew what was going to happen. And we were working to fix up a place with airtight walls and insulation and big supplies of food and bottled air. But the place got smashed up in the earthquakes and they were all killed. So I put the nest together at the last minute in the living room of our apartment. It's a four-room apartment.
You must have seen some of the people, like the frozen ones downstairs.
At that time, Bud, I only thought of one thing. Your mother and survival. If I had stopped to think, I wouldn't have even tried to make the nest. It would have seemed ridiculous. Blankets and a coal fire against the cold and vacuum of space. But I didn't think. I survived.
I wasn't listening carefully as Pa went on about the building of the nest. I kept thinking about something else. About that light I'd seen outside. I kept asking myself, what if the frozen people were coming to life? What if they were like the liquid helium that crawls toward heat when it should be frozen solid? What if something were coming from the Dark Star to get us? Something making the frozen people move, not by themselves. Would fit with what I'd seen. A young lady's face and the moving light. I sat there and shivered, thinking of the frozen people with minds from the Dark Star creeping, crawling, snuffing their way, following the heat to the nest. And then, over from beyond the blankets, I thought I heard a tiny noise.
So I asked myself then, what's the use of going on? Why prolong a doomed existence of hard work and cold and loneliness? The human race is done. The earth is done. Why not give up, I asked myself.
And then I did hear the noise, louder this time, a kind of shuffling tread coming closer.
And then I got the answer. The earth's always been a lonely place millions of miles from the next planet. And no matter how long the human race might have lived, the end would have come some night. Those things don't matter. What matters is that life is good, has a lovely texture, like some rich cloth of fur or the petals of flowers, crocuses, daffodils, or the fire's glow. And that's as true for the last man as the first.
Still, those steps kept shuffling closer. Pa was talking, and Ma was dreaming with her eyes closed, and Sis was looking at herself sideways in the mirror. And I was the only one who heard the noise. A noise outside.
So right then and there, I told myself that I was going on as if we had all eternity ahead of us. I'd have children, and I'd teach them all I could. I'd get them to read books, try to enlarge and seal the nest. I'd try to keep everything beautiful and alive. I'd keep alive my feeling of wonder, even at the cold and the dark and the distant stars.
Pa.
Shh.
Pa, I hear.
I know.
What is it, Alfred? What is it? What's going on? Oh, you've got to tell me. Pa, I'm scared.
Quiet. But... you heard it?
Uh-huh. A kind of shuffling, coming toward the nest.
Oh. Sis, take care of your mother.
It's all right, Ma. Lie down. Come on.
I'll take the hammer. You take the hatchet.
What is it, Pa? What is it?
I don't know. Listen.
It's closer.
Oh. Mush.
Pa, the blanket is moving. Ready with your axe.
Hello? Who's there? Is there somebody in there?
Come in. It's all right.
They're alive. Alive.
Who are you?
Alfred. Alfred. Hutchinson. Dr. Alfred Hutchinson. You can take off your helmets in here.
But the air.
We have air.
We bring it in pails.
Come on, Ralph. Let's take off the helmets.
It's impossible. Where are you from? We thought we were the only ones.
Los Alamos.
The nuclear laboratory.
Yes, that's right. We get our power from the reactor, using the stockpile of bombs for fuel.
Then there are others. There are other men. There are other men.
Pa, is it all right? Should I put the axe down?
Yes, it's all right. You can put it down.
You mean you come from another nest?
It's a little bigger than this. We've got a small airtight city with airlocks.
We generate our electricity, food from hydroponics.
I can't believe it. I can't.
I can't believe this. It's impossible. You can't maintain an air supply without hermetic sealing. It's impossible.
Oh, no, it's simple. As long as you keep the fire going to melt the air, and enough air boiling to keep the fire burning.
How did you come here? Why?
Well, we keep scouting around for survivors. There are a number of colonies, Brookhaven, Oak Ridge, and Harwell in England, and the Argonne Laboratory in France. We didn't expect to find anything in this city, though. But our detectors picked up a heat trace, so we tracked it down.
Alfred, you're forgetting your manners. We have company.
Of course. Sis, throw a handful of coal on the fire.
Pa, a whole handful?
Doesn't matter now. And Bud, bring out another pail of air.
Why, it's incredible.
And you have laboratories and transport?
We only have a two-seater scout, but if we rip out the bulkhead to the storage compartment, we can make it all right.
We can have you back at Los Alamos in 4 hours.
What's the matter?
I guess we really hadn't thought about it that way.
But, I wouldn't know how to act there. And besides, I haven't any clothes.
Just doesn't seem right to let this fire go out. It's been 18 years. Burning every minute.
But you can't stay here.
Ralph.
But after all...
Ralph.
Oh. Look, Dr. Hutchinson, we'll go out to the ship and bring back a small power heater. I know this is very sudden and upsetting to you. You need a chance to adjust.
We'll be back in a few minutes. It's incredible. In buckets.
Well,
they didn't think the nest smelled so good. I could tell.
She had a wave in her hair. Did you see that? And lipstick.
I suppose we have to decide what to do.
Pa, at Los Alamos and those other places, there'll be lots of people, won't there?
Yes.
I mean, not just your father or a brother.
That's right.
Boys?
I suppose so. But somehow I feel a little empty.
Alfred, it's different now that we know others are alive. You don't have to feel the responsibility for keeping the human race going.
Pa, I'd like to see those rockets and laboratories. Wouldn't you, Pa?
I suppose so.
It won't be easy leaving the nest. I mean, it's just right and there's only 4 of us. It's kind of a scary idea. Big place with a lot of strangers.
You'll get over that feeling, son. The trouble with the world was that it kept getting smaller and smaller till it ended with just the nest. Now it'll be good to have a real, huge world again. The way it was in the beginning.
And so, we're going to leave the nest in the morning. By Pa's clocks. We've got the power heater going now. Seems funny to be this warm when it isn't Christmas or somebody's birthday. But still, it's hard for me to realize that this is the last time I'll go out of the nest. Through all the blankets. To get a pail of air.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the Edward M. Ludwig story, A Coffin for Jacob. With never a moment to rest, the pursuit through space felt like a game of hounds and hares. Or was it Follow the Leader? Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you A Pail of Air, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Fritz Leiber and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Ronnie Liss, Pamela Fitzmaurice, Richard Hamilton, Eleanor Phelps, Rita Lloyd, and Joe DeSantis. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
For tonight's second serial, Temple of Vampires, from the anthology series I Love a Mystery.
She was yelling for us.
Sonny, are you all right?
She isn't here.
She's not.
I tell you, I heard her yelling outside.
But Reggie's on guard. Reggie, where's that flashlight?
Is something the matter?
Hermie, you stay right where you are.
Sure.
Doc, get down out of the plane.
I'm getting...
There, you got your gun?
You think I haven't? There. Hey, Reggie, Jack, bring that flashlight.
All right, I'm coming with it.
Stay in here.
Now, you stay right where you are.
Hey, Jack, come here.
Well, what's the matter?
I found him. Anyway, I think it's Reggie. Turn on the flash.
Here, let me see.
Yeah, they tried to strangle him. Will you look at that raw eye around his throat?
Quick, cut him loose.
Got it. Yeah, what no count. Kitty cat dug that.
All right, we've got him just in time. Get some water quick while I pump some air into his lungs here.
Save a stick. Okay.
Yeah.
Here you go, Jack. Want me to swallow some?
All right. Throw it in his face.
Uh-huh.
Here. Help me lay him over this rock. Head down.
You bet you. Let's go.
All right, easy. There.
Is he breathing?
Beginning to. Hurts. Going like a machine gun.
Are you up there?
We're up here, Hermie. You stay right where you are till we say so.
Reggie.
He ain't feeling so good. Been in bed all the time, though.
He's gonna have an awful sore throat in the morning.
Must have tossed the noose over his head and then jerked him backwards off his feet.
Yeah.
Wonder they didn't break his neck.
Well, probably thought they had. Yeah. Okay, he's gonna be all right now.
We ain't paid much attention to Sonny. What do we do now?
Well, load him into the plane.
All right. Grab hold. Yeah. Got him. All right. Come on.
All right, let him down. All right, I'll climb up into the ship, and you hold up so I can get a hold of him.
Okay.
Can I do anything?
Yes, keep back out of the way, Hermie. You just take it easy.
I guess nothing like this ever happened to me before.
All right, now you stand out of the way here. All right, Jack, lift him up. Here, Hermie. You hold the flashlight.
Yeah, sure.
Up he comes.
Yeah, just a little bit more.
I'm on my tiptoes now. How's that?
All right. You got him by the coat collar. Give him a boost.
There.
With him.
Yeah. Got him?
Yeah. There.
Can't he talk?
No, he's unconscious.
Can he ever talk again?
All right, he'll be all right in a little while. Now look, Hermie. Now, just listen to me.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you're one of the men in this outfit from now on. How about that?
Sure am.
All right, now, I got a job for you. You think you can do it?
Sure.
Now, good. You're going to have to stay here and look after Reggie until he comes to.
Alone?
Yeah. Doc and I are going to have to go find Sonny.
But where is he?
Well, we don't know. That's what we got to find out. Can you do that?
I guess so.
All right. Now, we'll lock up the plane so nobody can get in. Now, you just stay here and keep very quiet. And pretty soon, Reggie will wake up and talk to
me. I'll try.
Hey, Jack. What are you doing?
Climb down again, huh? Hermie's going to stay here with Reggie.
Yeah? What's that for?
Reggie's got to have somebody to look after him.
I get it. That's great, Hermie. That's what I call a man after Mona.
All right, come on, Doc. Hurry.
Yeah. Bye, old boy.
Bye, Doc.
Remember, just keep quiet. Now, if anybody comes around the plane, don't move. Now, they can't get in, all right?
All right.
Now, we'll be back as quickly as we can. So long now.
So long, fella.
What's the matter?
The path from the lake to the temple, it should be here somewhere.
Flashing light around. Hey, there it is over yonder.
All right, come on.
Better keep the light on. Running the way we are.
All right, give us a way.
As soon as they give us a way, I'm going to break my neck.
All right, we're on the path now.
Seem to be. We're in the tall vines. Got any idea what we're going to do when we get there?
Well, the ledge is our best bet.
If he's got Sonny over now, the ledge was sunk. Hey, where's our footsteps?
We're in the moss of the stone courtyard. Now look out for those bushes.
Then we're here, Jack.
Yeah, now, there's the steps leading up to the temple. Keep
okay.
Close, all right?
Okay. Now, sticking our necks out, though, seems like.
All right, now, take it easy now.
Will we just walk right in?
Why not?
In the old temple.
Quiet. We're heading for the steps leading up to the ledge.
I'm with you.
Okay, up we go.
Nothing's changed since this morning.
What did you expect?
Seems like there'd be some kind of celebration, perhaps in a white room.
First ledge.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jack.
Oh.
Another torch rally.
Parade of the Goons.
Every time they have a parade around the altar, they have a new sacrifice.
Well, what about it, huh?
But Jack, they just took Sonny away from us. How about you and I getting down there and busting up the little party?
Oh, the Doc.
It's Sonny at the head of the parade to carry the body.
It's stripped down to a loincloth. What do we make sure?
Wait, nothing.
Look, Doc. It's another Indian.
You sure?
Look for yourself.
Well, what do you know? It ain't Sonny at all. Another dead Indian. Sure looks like a weird bunch in those black robes lit up by torches.
Yeah, they got onto the underground passage, too.
There's a parade. It is a parade.
You, the guy who loves a parade, huh?
Not that kind. Anyway, we know Sonny wasn't the guest of honor. What do we do?
Go on up to the next ledge.
What's that
for? You remember yesterday when we saw those shadows floating back and forth from ledge to ledge?
I do.
Well, they were landing on the higher ledge.
Yeah, but most activity was up there. All right.
Now, that's why we're going up.
Why not? Only we're going to need wings if anything happens, you know that. This climb will put us up about 40 or 50 feet in the air.
Yeah, if they can take it, so can we.
If they took Sonny up this high, she ain't never going to be good for nothing again.
Why?
The way she feels about high places.
I'll keep in close to the wall. Those steps are getting pretty narrow.
My shoulders cut my groove an inch deep in the stone wall.
All right, here we are. Be careful.
He says, be careful. Now we're up what?
Well, There's got to be some answer to why they float over on the other ledge.
We're going to walk along the edge and look for something.
Examine every inch of it.
Well, get out your magnifying glass. Here we go.
And we'll have to be satisfied with a flashlight.
I'd rather have a parachute.
I'll use the flashlight on the ledge. Now, you go into each priest's cellars as we come into it. Well, you got matches, don't you?
A couple of boxes, yeah.
Well, we'll use them.
Use them, instead of... Nothing in here, huh? There's a debutante thing.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah.
There's something I never noticed before.
What's that?
Look at those iron hooks in the wall. There seems to be one every so often.
What about them?
They must be for something.
Maybe the monks used to hang their clothes on them when they went to bed.
Mm-hmm. Go on examining the rooms.
Yeah. Nope, nothing here.
Doc, come out here on the ledge. I found it.
You did? You found what?
All right, here it is. This is how they float from ledge to ledge. Naturally, it would have to be this way. See how simple it is?
Ooh, what's happened?
Richie, you awake?
Oh, what's that? Oh, that you, Hermie?
Yeah. Took you an awful long time to wake up.
Oh, my throat. I feel like I've been honored guest at a necktie party. I say, what happened? Where are we?
In the airplane.
Oh, but where's Jack and Doc?
They're gone. And so is Sonny.
Sonny?
I guess somebody choked you and ran off with Sonny.
Choked me? By Jove, now I remember. Something slipped around my neck and I was jerked off my feet. Oh, that's the last I remember.
I'm glad you're awake. I don't like being out here alone.
Well, they went off and left you?
Jack locked the door of the plane. I don't like it.
Oh, but where did they go?
I don't know. To find Sonny.
Those blasted brutes jumped me and carried Sonny off?
That's what Jack said.
Well, we can't stay here. I've got to get out and help.
But we can't. We're locked in.
I have a key.
But Jack said to stay here.
I don't care what he said. Quiet. Oh. Listen.
What's the matter, Ratch?
Listen.
Is something the matter?
There's someone outside the plane.
Oh. You think it's the vampires?
I know jolly well it's the vampires.
What are you doing with your revolver? You going to shoot somebody?
With pleasure. A vampire's hide will look jolly well nailed to the door of my trophy room.
Have a good evening. Come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.